Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey.
And today we are hitting the West Coast for, well, what was a surprisingly fantastic action film. This is Ambulance, a.k.a. Michael Bay's Heat, a.k.a. Michael Mann's GTA 5.
I'm sorry, brother. Sorry that I brought you into this. I just wanted things to be the way they used to be.
That's my brother, Will.
I could use some help.
My wife needs this surgery.
This is real life.
How's that right? You put your life down on the line for this country? You leave your family, your home? How much do you need?
231.
How about more? 32 million. I need an extra man.
I came to you for a loan.
Look, have I ever gotten you anything that I couldn't get you out of?
It's time for you to do something for your family.
I gotta be honest. Michael Mann's GTA 5 was the only thing in that entire sentence that I agree with.
I mean, I'll explain the heat aspect. I know it sounds... It sounds like unnecessary, unearned praise, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, emphasis on unearned praise.
Ouch. Starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, and Aiza Gonzalez. It's a real simple bank heist car chase film that happens to be drawn out for 2 hours and 50 minutes. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II plays Will, a former Marine who has returned home and is just trying to make enough money so that he can afford treatment for his wife, who has cancer. Enter his evil brother, who is also a bank robber, following in the footsteps of their father, slash adopted father, and he just needs his brother's help for one more sweet ride that will totally net them more money than they will ever need. And it's at a moment's notice that all of our action starts and just doesn't let up for a solid 2 hours. I really, really like how efficient Michael Bay has become.
Well, I mean, he's very much efficient if you're looking to have motion sickness induced.
Yes.
But other than that, I'm in a bit of a... strange place with this movie because it felt lazy in a lot of places, but it was good lazy. It was like the only place that Michael Bay was really trying was the camera work. Like, he overdid that so much that he completely forgot about story. But at the same time, at the end of the movie, I was like, this isn't good, but I don't hate it.
See, that's funny, because I came at it from the exact opposite perspective, where I see exactly where you are coming from. I'm not going to disagree that...
Yeah.
That is, like, there's a lacking there, but whereas you see him being lazy and not putting something in, I see a reduction, a focusing... He has ejected so much of the nonsense material he used to hang on to that were a part of his oeuvre. And he's become matured, he's become focused, and this is a tight 2 hour and 15 minute action film that results from it, where you can see set up perfectly, you can see character development, there's some fantastic performances, we'll get into those. You see him playing with a lot of great cinematic toys that, frankly, I think would have landed more if we didn't live in a world where CGI would reproduce those kinds of shots. And so your brain is saying, that's a real thing. Then the other half of your brain goes, yes, stupid, it's a movie. It's, you know, you're just watching a movie. Nothing's real. Stop trying. And then it repeats back and goes, well, then I guess it's not real. I guess it's not interesting. I guess it's CGI. When in actual fact, there are incredible cinematographers and drone pilots doing just terrific work in this film. And I personally, I'm just a little disappointed that the technology didn't exist previously for Michael Bay.
Yeah.
But I see this very much like his Avatar, where if you're not interested in the shots and the cinematography and the effects itself of the, you know, the car crashes, the high speed chase, an hour and a half of high speed chase is a bitch to plan and even harder to pull off. And I feel like they did that. If you're not into like any of that extravagance, then you're probably going to not be interested in this. But personally, I think it's the reduction of everything that is Michael Bay into its purest, most gelatinous form.
Now, I'm also in the position of, yeah, I don't agree, but I can see where you're coming from, and I'm not going to argue. But and I would also say that, frankly, yes, this movie is making a great case for the potential of drone use in cinematography. The problem is, a lot of these wonderful drone shots that Michael Bay is doing because he can, feel like they're there because Michael Bay can.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, like, but I feel that it's not... See, there's this other aspect to it that it's surprisingly rare in a film, and I'll go into a little further detail on why. Typically, New York gets played on film like as a character. Like, New York's a character. New York's part of the character of this story. You know, look at any Woody Allen film, and he's always saying shit like that. Usually, when LA appears in something, it's kind of a ridiculous, over-the-top version of it, or it's a nostalgic-driven Hollywood idea of it. And this felt like an actual love letter to the city of LA, which, of course, Michael Bay has said it is. And all of that over-the-top, sexualized filmmaking, that cinematography that usually is pointed at women's asses and jet fighters and shit like that, has instead been pointed at the city and architecture, and like not just like the expensive shit, but like the known communities, the murals people in LA would recognize. An incredibly misogynist, sexist eye has been turned on architecture, and it makes the city look hot as fuck. And, you know, this is LA, and it just makes love to the camera. The entire city just goes all up in that camera. And I feel like that's what all of those extra shots were. They weren't car crashes necessarily. They weren't sexy shots of women or explosions. There's actually surprisingly few base explosions in this base explosion.
That's true.
They were of the city. They were of streets. They were of pans from close up on the personal perspective to high up and panning, and it makes you have a distinct geography of it. And if you lived and like memorized LA, I'm sure you can follow this entire film like blindly and just be like, yeah. No, if I'm not paying attention and walking on my phone, I might end up just like following the trajectory of this. You can do this in GTA, I feel. You can completely rake this whole movie in GTA because it's all there. In that sense, like it's a love letter to all of those known areas that aren't just tourist shit.
Well, and I'm sure that I would have gotten all of that if I wasn't having to turn away from the screen every few minutes for fear of completely losing my equilibrium or getting so completely lost, but after close-up, after close-up, after close-up, within so many lens flares that even J.J. Abrams is going, look, dude, I have learned my lesson. Come on.
Listen, that's like going to see Starlight Express and going, wait a minute, is this a campy musical? I didn't expect a campy musical. It's a Michael Bay film. There's going to be terrible Dutch angles and weird close-ups and flying wetsits and who's its Mahui all over the place.
True, but at the same time, you have a bank robbery with so many cuts that it makes Taken 3 look good. And it's also one of the most incompetently planned bank robberies I have ever seen put to film.
I know, isn't it fantastic just how badly done it is? Not as a film, but like, these characters are going to fuck up. They're going to fuck up. You know they're going to fuck up. And it's just, it's fantastic because if you read any stories about like bank robbers or organized criminals like that who do something like it's the same activity sustained, when they eventually fuck up, like that final job that is truly just shits and tits, it's just like this. They rush it. There's weird little problems like, oh, this guy got replaced. Don't worry, this guy's great. And it's not that he's a cop. It's just you don't know the dynamic. Yeah. Things change and go wrong. And this is why careers in like bank robbery end. And it was really fascinating to see it play out in that sense of like, for a Michael Bay action film, this wasn't entirely unrealistic. It goes to great depth to actually, in terms of a Michael Bay film, to explain the situation of law enforcement, why they're doing what they're doing. You know, they exposition all over the place. It's fantastic, oh, yeah. Actually. But in doing so, you get a real sense of like, a smarter kind of way of dealing with a bank robbery. And that makes for a more interesting bank robbery film, because we've all seen heist films. That's the problem with heist films. That's why there's so few of them now.
Yeah.
They've been done. You have to do like character dramas and intricate, you know, locked door mysteries. And those are hard to write because you have to have a really good idea. And I think he found the right balance in essentially giving us some really good actors chewing the hell out of scenery in a kind of locked box chase after a colossal shoot 'em up fuck up. It's a little bit of everything without having to commit to anything. And that allows him to keep his Michael Bay pace going.
Well, as far as the actors go, yeah, there I completely agree. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Damn!
But, like, between this, between and Mysterio, like, the man does a great villain.
He doesn't ever phone it in. He's just terrific, and I much rather see him do manic than sullen. He's a good sullen. He's got a good look for sullen. He's a sullen-looking guy. But he's great when he's manic.
Oh, no, he's great. The plot lets him down. But he's great. Like, right off the bat, when Danny and Will first meet up, and Danny starts trying to recruit Will for this job. And he wants Will, if I remember right, to be the driver. And we find out that they're leaving to do this job in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sitting in the theater going, okay, let me get this straight. You want me to buy this man as a master bank robber who still doesn't have a driver 5 minutes before the job is supposed to start? And we have to skip ahead because we're going to jump over the part of Will actually accepting the job, because that never happens on camera. Will's not even the driver.
No.
What? This is the guy we're following. This is who I'm supposed to take seriously.
Now, this might be me giving the film more credit than it deserves, but to me, that came off as Gyllenhaal's character slowly losing the plot. And by the end of the movie, you've completely lost the plot. This entire thing is him breaking down and collapsing, and he's just trying to dig himself out of a massive hole that we find out about later. He's Hail Marrying an attempt at a relationship. I'm pretty sure if you ask Jake Gyllenhaal, he would say that the character never actually truly believed that he was going to make it out of this. I think this entire thing is a suicide desperation run to try to, like, get everything in his life back and not become his father, and instead he absolutely loses everything. But he expected to. This is self-destruction 101, and golly, Jake Gyllenhaal sure is fun to watch fall apart.
Oh, yeah, no, like, so much of this, it's almost like every character in some way is in their own movie.
Oh, I love the cop, the partner of the cop. I don't even remember his name.
I was going to get to him.
That guy totally thinks he's in his own movie. And now he gets buddy cop movie with the dog because the guy's owner got shot.
This is the thing. Jake Gyllenhaal thinks he's in Falling Down.
Yeah.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen thinks he's in John Q.
I never saw that.
Like to be clear, and in all fairness, I haven't seen John Q either. But it's that basic, like, man struggling to get medical care for his wife.
Oh, okay.
Like the basic plot elements are pretty much Will's story.
Fair.
Now, Officer Mark, the partner of the cop who got shot, at one point suddenly decides that he's in Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, and then just straight up exits the movie for a good 20, 30 minutes.
He sure does. There was definitely a moment where I felt his absence. I was like, hey, where did that guy go? Like, they essentially wrote him off. And then he comes back a little bit, but it's just, damn, such potential. You have to just find one more spot for him, because I really like that character. He was so determined to be the hero. And it's like, no, dude, that's not this movie. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then you have Garrett Dillahunt as Captain Monroe, who, now, you mentioned Heat earlier.
Yeah.
And Garrett Dillahunt thought he was in Heat the entire time.
Yeah.
I also spent the entire movie looking at him and going, was Timothy Oliphant not available?
And see, that's why I think that this is a fantastic Michael Bay film, because he literally stuck Heat in his movie as, like, a side plot. He is just like, yeah, I like that too. Here's Heat. It's not the entire movie, because, you know, you don't want to watch Michael Bay's Heat. Truly, it would not pan out. But Heat with GTA and a commentary on the American healthcare system? Oh, that's fantastic, Michael Bay. This is truly the most Bay of Bays. This is Bay.
Yeah, and if he had followed up with at least one of those plot lines instead of just leaving them all dangling, it would have been a better movie. I mean, okay, at that point, it would not have been a Michael Bay movie. But
yeah, but, like, he's not, you know, he's not remaking them. He's just including them, and therefore we can't have the ending that Heat has. Fuck that. No, we have to have the ending that this movie points to, that, like, you think is going to end the way you expect it to, because Heat. But no, ultimately, this is a movie about a paramedic doing her job. It's another one of those Michael Bay salutes service people kind of thing. And you just don't kind of understand that until the last 20 minutes, when it really piles on quite quickly.
Oh, yeah. No, that was another thing where I was going, wait, I was supposed to be following her this entire time?
She's the hero. See, that's what I don't get about douche bros who go on and on about, like, oh, it's a woman who's the hero. Oh, she's Latina. Oh, it's representation. And it's like, and Michael Bay is out there making these movies. Michael Bay is not as sexist as you. Stop it. Stop it. Bad.
Yeah, when you are more sexist than Michael Bay, and like, we have both seen enough Michael Bay films to know that if we're saying that about you, oh, that says something about you.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Bay is the action cinema equivalent of an upskirt shot. And yet, he is more progressive than a quarter of the internet.
give or take, yeah. And, like, Isaac Gonzalez is, yeah, again, great job as Cam. She didn't feel like the main character that I was supposed to see her as by the end of the movie. But again, that's not on her.
No, that's not on her. That's on focus. Especially since Will was the protagonal focus of most of it. But I believe that's meant to weight heavily into him so that when he gets removed, you see how necessary it is and how reliant he actually has been on her. Like, the action really has followed her. You just process it through presumption. And that's the other thing. This may be Michael Bay critiquing himself and his constant focus on male protagonists.
Or at least Michael Bay critiquing his use of CG.
Or Michael Bay critiquing his use of CG. Or Michael Bay possibly throwing an entire studio under the bus. Sorry, CGI studio. We know how bad it is for your entire careers and how hard you work and all the crunch, and usually you end up getting fired, but you know, this movie looks like shit. Yeah, that is a direct quote. I am not saying that. I love this film's look. I think it's great, but getting into that,
like I said, I had my issues with the camera work. This CG? No noticeable issues. I don't know what Michael Bay was talking about.
I honestly have no idea what he was talking about. I assume he was actually making a joke about a production print or perhaps some sort of, you know, like, more of a sarcastic joke about, like, oh, the CGI looks terrible, and it's, like, clearly a physical prop doing a physical act. Like, the context is lost. I don't know it. So I'm just going to assume that he wasn't actually saying what he reportedly did. Because, yeah, what fucking CGI? I know there is some clean up wires and remove like pads for people to land on. And the explosions always get a little pumped up and everything. Sure, absolutely. But I don't know where. I couldn't tell you a single shot. Ones that I would say, oh, that's a CGI shot? Because of this exact precise film, I would actually be more inclined to say, no, that was a drone. Or, like, you stitched together two shots.
Yeah, I was just going to say, or a combination of drone work and CGI. Because, I literally have the trailer playing muted on IMDb right now, and I just saw a shot of two police cars crashing where I'm looking at it and I'm going, that could have been CG just because, like, of the way it's done and slows down. But again,
yeah,
quality-wise,
like, that's
not noticeable.
That's not what I call CG anymore. Like, I look at this and I would assume, okay, when they run into objects, like if a car hits a brick wall, the car's going to hit it a little bit faster. The brick wall's going to shatter and explode a little more than it did. There's going to be some more debris. I expect some of that debris to be fake. I expect some of the force in the hit to be fake. If a car, I know a couple of times patrol cars go through water buckets, you know, the ones at the corners and intersections.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't actually look that cool. So you
just add
a little water. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure stuff like that is enhanced. I'm sure that the muzzle flash on the minigun is enhanced. I am sure that, you know, but those aren't CG anymore. CG is if you didn't actually film this in LA. That's CG.
Also, I meant to mention this earlier, but with the initial bank robbery, when we say that this goes wrong to absurd degrees, once this movie is available digitally, I want to take that entire action sequence, take the score out, and put in the score from the mall chase sequence in Blues Brothers. Or Yakety Sax. And I feel like it would still work.
And I, once again, coming from a completely different perspective, also think it would totally work.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would imply the failure. The entire thing is a complete fucking farce from the moment that the cop causes the entire situation to fall apart because he decided to ask a bank teller on a date. Like, that's the stupidest fucking thing ever. To the fact that they were already being surveilled. Like the interagency rivalry and disconnect, lack of communication, it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah,
you could see the failures on both sides coming together like a domino pattern designed not to actually complete. Like the ultimate blue ball frustration domino pattern where it doesn't matter how cool, this is not going to complete. Fuck you. And that was entertaining to watch. And from there, everyone's panic and tantrum. Every single character is just having a low-level panic tantrum in their own way. Because no one gets their way. No one. It's great.
Also, with the cop and his partner, when the cop's partner is trying to motivate him to go in and ask the bank teller out, did you notice that? And this was one of the things that just amazed me in the best of ways. He misquotes a Michael Bay movie in a Michael Bay movie.
Oh yeah, and then the character, the young rookie, literally doesn't know about the movie The Rock. It's fantastic. It was a wonderful little moment of, like, we finally reached the point where Michael Bay is mature enough that he's laughing at himself, and I am entirely here for it. This film, I feel, is kind of like Moonfall. I know, what a thing to say. And I don't know who to apologize to first with that comment, but I will stand by it, because I believe that while they will and are box office failures, technically, when people later look at the filmography of these filmmakers, these films are going to be quintessential. It's like, okay, this is their late period where they found exactly what it is that they do and have laser focused into it. Moonfall is the most Roland Emmerich film Roland Emmerich has ever made. And Ambulance is the most Michael Bay film Michael Bay has ever made. Possibly with the exception of, like, half the runtime of Transformers 2, which is just random violence. But, as core concepts, this is the most Michael Bay film.
Well, I was just going to say, as long as we're only talking about the first half of Transformers 2, because I deny the existence of anything in the franchise beyond that point. Like, I'm quite literally like, no, that was a movie and a half long, and then it just stopped. Nothing else happened.
if I take this film and Pain and Gain, I believe we have acceptable apologies for the existence of the Transformers franchise. I think those two are well worth having to go through like a decade of Transformers films. So yes, I am actually saying this film itself is a good enough apology for two or three Transformers films worth of mistakes and suffering.
Which I think if we add in the fact that Michael Bay has said, yeah, I should have stopped after number three, I can work with that.
Okay. See, we're getting there. We're slowly working towards it. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, speaking of the interagency mess, I'm only going to phrase it this way because the movie basically phrases it this way. The gay FBI agent who comes in, all with the character of Captain Monroe already there, the FBI agent almost feels redundant.
But the redundancy is the point. Like, I feel like the levels of policing present in this just adds to, like, a Byzantine unnecessary confusion that is the entire purpose of it. Like, if you rob a bank now, it's not just, like, a couple of cops that you get a shootout with or one interrogator slash, you know, like a communicator, negotiator. You are getting in a fight with a system that can track you with, you know, like Cessnas and an entire fleet of helicopters and an endless fleet of vehicles, and they have patterns. And I think that was meant to imply the inescapability of it, that, like, no matter what, this isn't just a little bank thing. You can't just rob a bank anymore, and especially not for $32 or $34 million. This is an incredible, interconnected security, like, culture that you're attempting to fuck over, and it has you. It has your number. You're fucked.
Which, like, coming from you, I get that, but looking at the movie, and I will grant the movie the possibility that maybe it's just the way that this is how I'm used to this being done.
Mm.
But I wonder if that would have worked better if both characters had come into the story at the same time or, like, closer together.
The introduction to him is a little later for it to be necessary. Yeah, like, they should have probably, Will and him should have actually been paralleled, so that then you realize, like, oh, actually, this FBI character we met at the same time as Will, and so you get, like, a parallel of lives. The one thing they have in common is brother slash former roommate, just like Dr. Doom. Richard, always be suspicious of your college roommate. They may eventually become a terrorist.
Oh, all things considered, I don't think there's really a may there because, well, I mean, when he's introduced and they do establish the fact that this guy knew who Danny was, like, knew his family, and they were at the FBI Academy together. So now we're bringing in The Departed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another movie that's been piled on.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, okay, yes, Jake Gyllenhaal is doing an excellent psychopath. But I'm also going, okay, you want me to believe this guy got into Quantico for an extended period of time? Especially when they had to have done background checks and had to know who his father was.
So here's the funny thing.
Oh, this goes good.
Mm, This is based on an I presume this is based on an actual thing that happened around the Whitey Bulger case. One of his good friends growing up throughout his entire life, who, like, when they were young, would do shit together, went on to become, like, the DA, I believe, that was responsible for prosecuting him. And instead, they just, like, worked up this great conspiracy and ran Boston. Who's going to work the case? Someone who's going to drop it. This has happened. This is a ridiculous thing that has actually happened before. And that's why I think I really love this, because it's every stupid fucking thing that you can actually point to and be like, nope, that, yep, mm-hmm, that happened. Yep, that, like, this is just a bunch of really dumb, true fucking things crammed into one unlikely event.
Which, yeah, I can see that. I think if this wasn't one of, like, six other movies piled on top of this main film,
yeah,
it would have been less of an issue.
I feel like it needs one more film added on top, and that film is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. I feel like they should have been chasing towards an X at the end. And just, like, school buses are chasing it, and, like, someone lands a fucking 747 on it. Like, there's a cruise ship that comes up at the end. I want total chaos. I want this to get even crazier than sudden last-minute Mad Max ambush. And I feel an X at the end of it, where they'd all chase the treasure and dig it up together, would have been just cherry on the end of this. The cherry on top of this ridiculous fucking cake.
No, totally. Like, that I can see. I think if this had been just a straight up action comedy, instead of, again, trying to be all these things at the same time, you could have done pretty much the same movie. A lot of plot elements would have been a lot tighter, mm-hmm. and I think it would have worked better.
And That's entirely fair. Obviously, I feel like Michael Bay didn't want to push this into parody levels. He wanted to have his nod, and he wanted to play and move on. So, you know, a little bit of sandbox, a little bit of fun, move on. A little bit of sandbox, a little bit of fun, move on. Name check the thing that you're interested in. GTA 5 got dropped. Obviously, his own works got dropped. You know, there's a couple of things mentioned in this. There is the paramedic's cell phone, or someone's cell phone, either the cop or the paramedic, has a Watchmen sticker on the back of it. That was fun. I noticed that.
Yeah, that was the cop who got shot. That was his phone, if I remember correctly.
I would be fascinated how that ended up, like, if it's supposed to be a reference to him feeling like he's a superhero. It's like, oh, it's just this naive idiot who just truly, like, doesn't even get, let alone how dangerous his work is. Watchmen, I mean, Christ, the kid doesn't even understand Watchmen. How can he be a cop? You gave him a gun, but he doesn't understand Watchmen.
Again, to go back to that portion of the internet, there's an awful lot of people who did not understand Watchmen.
Yeah. Oh, God, maybe he was a Snyder bro the whole time.
No, I feel like if he had been a Snyder bro, he'd have probably identified Will as the one who shot him. Fair.
And we're not going to explain why, but it should be obvious to anyone who has ever met one. Anyway. I really loved this film. It's a straightforward Michael Bay 90s style action film. Like, it's out of place entirely. I completely understand why it didn't really do much at the box office. It made its announced and public budget back, and there wasn't too much marketing for this, so I have no idea how much was spent on it aside from that. It was a very low budget film. $30 million. this does not look like a $30 million film. This is, once again, Michael Bay using all of his refined talents at this point to just give you exactly what you need.
Yeah, no, this definitely looks more than $30 million. There were a lot of little things that kept pulling me out of the movie as well. I mean, like I said, it was a half hour in before I could actually really start watching, you know, without getting dizzy. At one point, and it's adorable how they refer to this as a military strategy, because as the viewer, the place you're going to know this from is Too Fast, Too Furious. Specifically when they drive under that bridge and then like five ambulances all take off.
Yeah.
Some of that I was able to go with. Because on the one hand, okay, yes, they got those ambulances together awful quickly. But that's one of those things where it's a Michael Bay movie, so sure.
I like the setup with like, oh, contact the organized crime, and who knows what they can get together. What do you need? You need flamingos? We got flamingos!
Yeah, like I said, that aspect worked. On the other hand, at one point, Danny tells his... gonna say assistant because I can't think of anything better to bring a spray gun and blue paint.
Yeah.
To paint the ambulance blue.
Yeah.
And he fucks up and paints it bright green because comedy. Here's where I had the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they did that, and it's never mentioned again.
I feel like it's also an aspect of the maturing of his sense of humor. So typically that character would have also had some really stupid nagging thing beyond being a little forgetful and kind of not caring about it. He'd probably have two characters doing it. We'd end up with Transformers testicles again, like... This is a version of his restrained comedy, and in that sense, it's an idiot who, no matter what, just can't get anything perfectly right. And it again plays into the sustained collapse and chaos. Nothing at all, nothing goes right for anyone in this until... the very last moment when the paramedic makes a choice. If anything goes right, it's for the paramedic in this. Everything goes wrong for literally everyone else, and that includes the paint is wrong. Why? Because that's how these kinds of stupid goddamn things go wrong. If the paint is wrong, suddenly the whole plan is thrown out because you've made a bunch of assumptions based on this. The paint job looks terrible. So when it rips out of there after a whole, like... or when it rips out of the second location after a whole gun battle and chase and everything, the fact that it's been camouflaged effectively in this stupid way doesn't even matter anymore, means that even when you succeed, everything goes to shit. And I personally just felt that this was a fantastic example, much like Burn After Reading is, of everything going to shit. This is Michael Bay's version of Burn After Reading, thematically.
Well, see, the thing is, though, the assistant's logic was not what I had the problem with. Danny's logic I had the problem with. Because I'm sitting there going, okay, so you're gathering all of these ambulances essentially to play a shell game and get lost in the shuffle. Makes complete sense. But... then you decide to mark one different from everyone else.
You would not notice necessarily a blue delivery truck. That's the thing, is like, it's just this tiny little thing that while you're distracted looking other ways, you're not going to notice the blue truck. That's it. Like, that's all it was. It was a sleight of hand.
Even then, like I said, it makes more sense to not do it at all.
Fair.
And
but that's one of those great fuck ups.
Why would they, like, I would get having a couple of units following the other ambulances. Why would the cops not still follow the one truck that has been intentionally marked as different?
Because you don't know
from all the other ones.
Because all you see quickly is the blue truck, and then you see a bunch of like ambulances at the same time. So you don't process that those, you know, the blue truck is an ambulance. It's just another blue truck. Like, that's the blue is something people don't notice much, whereas the neon yellow is, and that's the fuck up. It draws attention. The blue would not nearly as much, and it covers over stuff way better. You wouldn't see nearly as many markings.
But that also then brings up the point of, as soon as Danny realizes it's neon green, why does he not scrap the idea entirely?
Because he's panicking. The entire thing is him collapsing. And because it's a panic choice. That is the purpose of his character, is to panic and make the wrong decision. Every decision he made, even when he's trying to be good, is the wrong decision to get him out of that situation. He's a fuck up.
Oh, no. I agree with that. I just also go back to what I said earlier, where I'm going, I'm supposed to buy this guy as a genius bank robber?
No, you're supposed to buy him as a bank robber. Most bank robbers who pull off ridiculous schemes are actually drunk or fucking stupid to the point that they don't even know what to do. And that's how they manage to do it, because it's like they dumb fuck their way into things. That's why they call things foolproof, because it ultimately is the fool who will do these things. And they won't know, and you won't know, and it'll just be like, what the shit? How'd you do that? And this time, it caught up with him, because he had tried it 30-something other times. And, like, that's a typical MO. After that many, you're gonna fuck up. And he did. And this is just the tale of the fuck up. And everyone dies, except for Yeah, and the paramedic. I can't remember if Jake's character even survives at the end. He gets shot, and he has an epiphany about what a shitty brother he is, and that's about it.
I would assume that he died, because when everything goes down, Will and shoots Danny in the back after Danny has just completely lost his mind. And apparently they're going to go full on Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Again, we need one more movie to pile on.
Well, that's what it's like. I like the moment that after he got shot and he's laying face down, he realizes, like, ah, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's like his brother always was the good guy. He's part of the toxicity of his father influencing his brother into this situation. He realizes what a complete fuck up he is, and I only say that from there it's kind of disappointing that we don't know if he lives or dies, because I would have liked to have known if they decide to just, like, he dies and the cops decide to pile everything on him, or if he lived and he not only did the cops decide to pile everything on him, but he also was like, no, I deserve that. Yes, I shot the cop. You know, like, what if he just took it? I was just curious to see if his character had that growth. That was all.
Well,
I just want that.
Totally fair. The way they do it, I think they try too hard to make it too ambiguous. A lot of quick cutting back and forth, and like, movie, seriously, please stop. With a lot of the stuff with the cop in the hospital bed afterward, and it seems like he's indirectly going to identify Danny as the shooter. So I think at that point, mm-hmm. they want you to think he's alive. But when, backtracking a little bit, when they come out of the ambulance and everybody goes to Will, it's all about going to save Will, including the cop who got shot's partner, who suddenly decides he has to help Will because reasons that could have been set up if he was in the movie more.
Well, I think it was a great moment for Cam. She got to guilt trip and browbeat everyone into doing the right thing, including the guy who like was supposed to have like that was the reason of why he saw himself the hero, is that when he failed to be heroic at the end, he can be guilt tripped into it. And I feel like that also implies at that point they would have helped Jake Gyllenhaal's character as well. Like, they were going to let them both die, and now because she's the hero and she did the right thing, now they're at least going to try to do their jobs.
Oh, no, totally. Like, for me, it's a case of that moment worked for her character, but we haven't seen the cop's partner enough for the moment to work for him. But all that said,
I mean, I felt it did because he went so hard on like, it's my partner, they've got my partner, you know, he dropped right into a high speed chase and nearly got shot in the face over this. I felt that they actually did set that up quite well. They should have probably reiterated some aspect of it later on to keep that connective tissue there. But yeah, I felt it was earned. I completely see where you feel it wasn't, because the distance between when he earned it and when it happened was like, that's just a little too long.
Yeah, no, it was, I think if they had developed his character a little more, instead of having him run off to do Turner and Hooch for a few minutes, again, one more movie.
Yeah.
I think that
but now I want Michael Bay's Turner and Hooch.
I mean,
they should totally actually turn that into fucking Turner and Hooch. It's like, yeah, from Michael Bay's Ambulance, it's Turner and Hooch. It's like, wait, what? It's like, yeah, that was Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, no, and...
Oh, okay.
It was him doing scenes with Michael Bay's dog, so why not?
Of course that's Michael Bay's dog. But it's unreasonably large.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, within all of that, it looked to me like Danny was just being left to bleed out on the sidewalk. So,
yeah,
from a logical standpoint, he's more than likely dead. From a story standpoint, they want you to think he may be alive. And maybe if we'd had a few more background actors in nurses' uniforms, like just that little thing that could have made those moments later on that little bit more believable.
Yeah, like, yeah, for me, believability wasn't a problem with this. I want a little bit more. And that's not even like, oh, this is a failing with the film. I think me wanting more of it is a good thing. And I definitely did not go into this expecting that.
Oh, fair enough. And but one last thing also with that end scene was, I find it odd, the cops brought Will's wife in at the wrong time.
Not unless you understand the LAPD's psychological tactics of tormenting black families.
I repeat when I say it was the wrong time.
I repeat, they were trying to torture her.
I can just add morally wrong on top of story wrong.
Yes. I see, morally wrong, absolutely. Story wrong, accurate to LA? I don't think so.
My thing with it story-wise is simply that I thought it would have made more sense that they either bring her in to help the negotiator talk Will down, or the first that when we see her, it's that little bit after that when Will's in his hospital bed.
I feel like those would have been the cliches.
Also,
they were well avoided. As well, it allows Will to remain a mystery factor, which is, again, how the FBI fucks up this. because there is a major factor in this equation that they don't know shit about until it is too late, when suddenly, now I understand this entire thing. Oh, shit. Now we know why. Now we understand how they're capable of this, and holy shit, we are fucking screwed because we were prepared for this and we got something much more. It just plays into that failure. They didn't know who the driver was, and it turns out the driver has a family connection, therefore major motive and loyalty, and then has all of this combat training. Jesus Christ, we probably would have adjusted our tactics if we knew that. It's just a part of, like, it's a terrific film showing how systems collapse. It's almost a Michael Crichton. If Michael Crichton had written this and it took place in the 70s, I absolutely could see it. It's in my head now. Oh no. Oh no!
Well, I think where most of my problem really was with the writing, Michael Crichton, even he probably would have helped. So, I mean, I can't not go with this.
Yes, yeah, that's because you're saying Michael Crichton thinking about Jurassic Park, and I'm saying Michael Crichton thinking about Rising Sun. It doesn't get better. Ratings. So I just felt like that was a really good way to
end. No, fair enough.
What do you give this film? Seeing as how I feel like we're going to give completely opposite, but completely attached and understandable ratings.
Oh, I quite simply, I give this movie the bottle of Dramamine that I should have been handed when I walked into the theater, and lamenting the fact that when I heard a woman walking out of the theater say that this was the best movie she had seen in a while, not taking the opportunity to turn around and go, this is your first film since the start of the pandemic, isn't it? Because Everything Everywhere All at Once was, I think, like two theaters down.
Yeah, but that's two theaters down's problem. Right now, we've got ambulance. I really loved it. I went into it expecting it to be kind of a technical celebration of Michael Bay's achievements, and it was. It very much is. But it was a distillation of so many, like, bank heists and ridiculous action films from the 90s, especially ones that take place in LA, and actual true crime events that I can at least think of, like, an example for every stupid thing that occurs in this, that it didn't feel entirely stupid to me. It just felt like, yeah, sometimes shit goes to shit, and this is the result. I thought it was at worst, an accidental classic of crime, action, thriller, drama, whatever the hell you call this, chase films. And at best, Michael Bay really deciding that he's going to start making films only for himself, not even for the studio anymore. The audience was told to go fuck themselves long ago.
Well, at the same time, though, Kevin Smith did basically the same thing, and that is how we got Tusk.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Cop Out.
Well, the only reason that I didn't say Yoga Hosers was that Tusk was the one that came to me first. But, yeah.
Someday we'll not cover those because they're terrible. I'm sorry, Kevin. I love you, but Yoga Hosers and Tusk are not good.
Oh, yeah, no. All respect in the world to Kevin Smith for everything he has accomplished The man is a wonderful speaker.
So much.
Wonderful speaker. Don't get me wrong.
Incredibly funny. Oh, terrific comic book writer.
Again, absolutely.
Handsome in the face and the pants.
It's like everything but as a filmmaker. Wonderful man. As a filmmaker, dude, it's time. Just, it's time. But
I like Jay and Silent Bob reboot anyway. Anyway, that's another film. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Real Geeks Presents Ambulance by Michael Bay. I have been Crash and Burn. You have been Mike Montgomery. Please like, share, and subscribe. Mike, where the hell can they get in contact with us? Again.
Well, we can most certainly be reached by email at realgeeksHFX@gmail.com. Especially since I'm sure there's at least five things I'm going to get called out on this episode. We can be found on Twitter at realgeeksHFX. And speaking of Twitter, I think I actually meant to mention this an episode or two back, but it completely slipped my mind. Those of you who followed me personally at the Merit Time Lord, first of all, obviously, thank you. But second, you're going to want to double check because I've actually reorganized my social media. So what you may instead now be following is what is currently my backup account. I'm still at the Maritime Lord. It's just a different account now.
So what's the new one?
My main account is at the Maritime Lord. But if you followed me before hearing this, you may want to double check because the account you may be following is at Maritime Lord Backup.
Aha.
And finally, of course, please rate us on your favorite podcatcher app. If you're following us on Apple Podcasts, leave a review.
Do it. Comment. Do it. Rate. Like.
Good, bad. We don't care. Just about anything raises our profile, which at the end of the day will only help the show.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you later this week for the B-roll. Bye, everybody.
See ya.